So, Bucky, the reason.
Have you ever had a dream that you had you could you do you you want you could do so you you do you could you you want you want him to do you so much you could do anything?
What is up, everyone? It's Andrew Bermudez, co-founder and CEO of Digzy, the commercial real estate search engine, which you can list properties for free and you can browse properties for free. If you want to get more exposure and also generate more leads, go to getdigzy.com. Also, I'll be linking below to a great tool that can help you guys generate more leads through your prospecting and marketing activities that you do daily. So if somebody doesn't respond, you can still know that they're in the market for real estate. That is the magic link feature, so I'll link below. Today, we have a wonderful guest who's gonna teach us and school us about something that we should be talking to landlords about that will help us get in touch with them, drive value, and win more business, and also strengthen existing relationships. That's Yona Wise, who's gonna be talking about guest segregation. But first and foremost, I wanna introduce my wonderful co-host, Bucky Beeman. Bucky today decided to wear a striped shirt because he was sick and tired of wearing other stuff. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and also where you got that wonderful garment?
I got it from a friend. If you start watching these episodes, you'll see that it's kind of the same five shirts that I always wear. So this will pop up multiple times in the future. But yeah, I'm a commercial real estate agent based out of Minnesota, home of the Mayo Clinic, and doing deals of all types, and really enjoy the career of commercial real estate, just the opportunity to work with individuals starting a business, growing a business, closing a business in some examples, and just helping advise them through the process. So that is me. That's what I do.
Home of the
Mayo Clinic.
Yeah. So the market that Bucky's in is home of the Mayo Clinic. So that's a pretty well-known staple right there. And also they have like an accelerator that they're doing there, right? To generate more, more technologies and more things around what they do.
Mayo is doing a lot with especially larger companies where they're partnering with them in different capacities. And it's bringing some smaller teams of these larger companies to the market. And then they're in partnership with Mayo, whether they're trying to do research or come up with devices or work on new technology. So yes, they're on the forefront of a lot of med tech and things of that nature.
Cool. So Yona, welcome aboard.
Thanks so much, Andrew, Bucky. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I've been really looking forward to this. You're super active on LinkedIn. You're super active in social media. You have you're a community builder, which is great. You invited me to one of your Zoom calls, and you do those weekly, I think, right?
Yeah, we do a weekly. We really started it when the COVID things hit. You know, mid-April, I was just like, we need to. There's no more like networking in person. No more meetups. I'm like, hey, let's do something. And I started a Zoom, a virtual meetup. So we're getting about like 50 to 100 people every week to come together.
That's exactly what I noticed on that one that I joined, because like I was like going through the Zoom call and like just scrolling through pages of like just faces. And I'm going, there's going to be like north of 50, maybe 100 people on here. So that kudos to you, man. That's great.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just like you. So that's great. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what do you do? What were you doing before what you did? And also start schooling us on things that we're not talking to landlords that can actually, you know, really add value, save them a ton of dough, and make, commercial real estate professionals look good. So let's go through your history.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we really want to focus on, especially as a broker. You want to make sure to how you can add value to your clients as much as possible. So what I want to talk about today is just one tool of how to get there, and saving money on taxes is the best way. Like you said, people like me, because I save people money. Like when I'm, I have an amazing job. People love me because I just help them save, thousands or millions even of dollars in taxes. So what I got to this point, my background is in education. So I was a teacher for many years. I love that. That's really my passion. And in the role that I'm in currently, it comes out because I'm really just spending a lot of time in business development, but just teaching about this concept that a lot of people don't even know about. I got into real estate about 5 years ago, just literally didn't know anything about the space, wanted to get involved somehow, some way. did a little commercial mortgages for a little while, a little residential brokerage, and then one way to another, really just through the network that I have and the people that I know, I got involved with this company, Madison Commercial Real Estate Services. So we do a lot of other things as well, title insurance and 1031s and due diligence and all kinds of stuff, lease abstracting, which is really cool for commercial. But one of the things we do is cost segregation. So this company is actually the largest, the biggest national company that does this. And so I'll just like jump in, like, what is that? Like, how is that, you know, what is that about? Like, what's this word cost segregation? These words, people don't even understand what it means.
Correct.
So just to break it down, it's a weird name that the IRS gave for an income tax deduction, just an advanced form of depreciation. That's really all it is. So to understand depreciation, we just kind of have to take a step back. And this is something really every single property owner, they may not talk about it a lot, but it's one of the main reasons why they're involved in real estate is the tax benefits. And when people think about, oh yeah, I've heard that. Sure, tax benefits, real estate. Well, what is that? It's this. It's cost segregation. That's really what it is. So it doesn't get talked about a lot. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't even know how you can take your depreciation to the next level through this. And it's not some weird, you know, kind of like weird kind of loophole or anything like this. This is directly from the tax code. In fact, cost segregation is considered the proper way to depreciate your property.
So really quick. So what you're saying right now is that what you're going to talk about is something that should have been done all along, but it's just underexplored or under leveraged. Is that correct?
Yes. And the reason why that is, and I have a few theories about that, but one of the main reasons why that is because, you know, when people think of taxes, they immediately like just go to their accountant, right? Well, first of all, their brains shut off, right? Taxes. Okay. I don't know. I have a CPA for that. But the thing is about cost segregation, the IRS requires an engineering component to this. So what we're doing is we have an engineer who's specialized in construction engineering and also well-versed in the tax code to know when we look at a building, how every tiny piece of that building and everything inside of it depreciates on a different scale. So that being said, accountants can't do it, which means...
So like an elevator depreciation versus, for example, some other component of the building, right?
Exactly. We're breaking down the building from structural components into all the little tiny details, personal property stuff like furnishings and fixtures and carpeting and wall coverings and, you know, all kinds of other things that are considered quote unquote personal property. So they're depreciating on a 5-year schedule, which means you can take those tax deductions over a 5-year period instead of over a 39-year period, which is huge. But you need an engineer to come in and identify what those things are, how much there is in the building, and what the value of all those things are. So this is where it's integral to, you know, to figure this out on your own or reach out to a cost segregation company, because accountants don't do this. And this is what I'm saying. This is one of the reasons why there's a disconnect, is because 99% of the accounting firms in the country do not do cost segregation in-house. There are some, you know, the big four, the big companies, they do it. They have engineers in-house to do this specifically, but most people don't. So their accountants aren't usually proactive enough to tell them about this. And that's exactly, you know, kind of what the IRS wants. Here's a way to do it and the right way to do it. But if you're not proactive to figure it out, we're not going to tell you that you can take more tax deductions as you're entitled to.
Got it. And it's kind of interesting. It's not that they can't do it. It's much more that they just don't have the tool in the toolbox to be able to do it correctly.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. That's the point. They don't not qualified, or they don't have the, you know, that component to it to actually do it.
So tell us a little bit about what, like, for example, we've talked about what it is. Like, how big of an impact is this? Can you give us kind of like a use case where you've seen, okay, property owner wasn't looking at this, or broker wasn't looking at this, landlord made X by doing X, Y, and Z?
Absolutely. Typically, regular depreciation, okay, well, just take a step back. Regular depreciation allows you to take about a 2-3% tax deduction of your purchase price of your building. Okay, and that's every single year. So that's great. You already get this little, you know, this deduction, so you're reducing your tax liability. What cost segregation does is it can literally double, triple, or even, you know, 10x that amount in the first year over the first 5 years. So someone who has $1 million property, and you can just multiply this because it's percentages, so it's proportional. So $1 million property, typically you'd have about a $20,000 tax deduction, you know, for regular depreciation. With first year, but what's called bonus depreciation or through cost segregation, you can literally take, sometime depending on what type and size of property is, you can literally take, you know, $200,000 to $300,000. So we're talking about 10xing that, those tax deductions in that first year, which is incredible if you think about it. Like, if you made $50,000 in income from a property, that $20,000 is not going to get you that far. Okay, it's going to knock out half your tax liability, but you still pay taxes on the rest. If you come in and take this huge deduction, what you're doing is not just wiping off your tax liability from this property. Oftentimes, it's going to roll over to your other properties and your ordinary income as well. Okay, if you're a real estate professional.
So you can grab the cost segregation advantages from one property and you can roll them over to another property?
Yeah, because rental property income, real estate income, is considered passive income, and cost segregation or depreciation is considered a passive deduction. So those come not just for this one property, but it spreads across all your properties.
So even though it's from property A, you can cross it over to property B as well, or do they both have to have their independent cost segregation analysis?
Each property needs its own cost segregation analysis, because essentially what that is like an appraisal. You know, it's looking at the building and everything in it, and creating this 100-page study which identifies all the different components. It's really, like you said, it's advanced form of depreciation. So it used to be called component depreciation, which is much more, you know, technically speaking, like that's what it is. Like, cost segregation is just a weird way of saying that.
Yeah. So, okay. So let me make sure that I understand this for the audience sake.
Sure.
So let's say on property A, we have $300,000 of accelerated depreciation, right? How does that roll over to other properties in that property owner's portfolio?
Again, the tax deductions are used against your taxable income. Okay. So if you have these tax deductions for one property, it first offsets any real estate income that you have.
Okay, so income, like as a portfolio.
Exactly. Okay. You're looking at your, you know, when you, at the end of the year or whatever, when you're doing your taxes, you have rental property income. You have, you know, making from one property, $50,000 from another property, $30,000 from another property, $200,000, and all that is taxed, right? But mm-hmm. if you have depreciation and you have all these deductions, that first and foremost offsets all of that income, which means you're reducing your taxable liability to zero, which means you're not going to get any taxes. And any extra depreciation, any extra tax deductions beyond that, meaning if you have more deductions than you actually have income, then that, if you're a real estate professional, meaning you're a broker or you're involved, you own property, you're operating, you're doing that stuff, you can roll that extra deductions to offset your ordinary income, any other income, not just your
real estate income. Wow, okay. That's
now
really
we're
powerful.
Talking.
Yeah, that's really powerful stuff.
It's huge.
Oh man. So talk to us about a scenario. Like, you go in, what are usually the components that get depreciated? I know, for example, we were talking about one thing on LinkedIn a while ago on one of their videos where we first started, like when I started getting really interested on this topic, was that TIs and things that they've been doing to improve the building lately, especially during COVID, or any things related to COVID that they've had to do, can actually help keep more money in their pocket, because right now most money is going out the door. You have debt service, if you do, which most companies have, you know, loans to pay off.
Right.
You don't have the ability with cost segregation to keep more of that money in your pocket, which really alleviates the sort of like the hoopla that you're going through, you know, like the difficulties.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a new law that passed with the CARES Act, and maybe that's where we were talking about this, that it came up, that actually allowed something called qualified improvement property, or QIP, to be depreciated over a 15-year schedule, which means essentially what depreciation is, let me just like take a step back, because depreciation is like it's kind of weird thing, okay? Depreciation means, the definition is, that things go down in value as time goes on, right? But that's not really what it is from a tax perspective. It's a borrowed term, because when you buy a property or you place something in service from new, that schedule starts over fresh. So if you buy a 50-year-old building, yeah, you now get to take this depreciation deduction, which is a deduction that IRS gives you based on the value of that property today, starting now. So you get to now take this whole tax deduction brand new. It doesn't matter if someone's owned it and he's already fully depreciated, starts over with a new owner. So one thing that was updated is that specifically with commercial properties, retail, it was originally called retail properties or restaurant property, that they can use any, if they're making improvements on that property after the acquisition, okay, in specifically interior improvements. So it's called, again, qualified improvement property. It's things that are not structural. So if you're doing, you know, maybe putting in new furnishings, or you're putting in, you know, different kind of decorative things, accessories, all kinds of things like that inside of your property, all of those can now qualify for what's this QIP, which can be taken as a first year tax write-off. So you can literally, all that you're spending is tenant improvements. If you're the one that's, you know, spending that, or you're the tenant and you're spending that money, either or, you can now take that as a first year. All the money that you spent, if it's, you know, not on the structural components, can be taken as a tax write-off.
So, it has to be non-structural. So it can't be like creating an office inside.
There are certain things in that office that will qualify. So again, what we're doing with the conservation is we're breaking down the property into mainly three categories. Okay, there's structural, which that's considered like walls, doors, windows, floor, roof. Okay, those are structural. Main electric, main plumbing, that's structural components, integral to the structure. It's always going to be the majority of the property, but there's a lot of stuff. And I'll just give a bunch of examples here for like a retail property, for example. Okay, you have two other categories, which is called personal property, which depreciates on a 5-year schedule. And then the second category is land improvements, which depreciate on a 15-year schedule, which means land improvements, this is huge, usually with commercial properties. We're talking about the asphalt paving, okay? The concrete, the landscaping, the walls, retaining walls, if you have any type of, you know, lighting, signage, all that stuff, actually the value of all that stuff, and it can be huge, especially, you know,
that's water, expensive stuff,
drain systems, all that kind of stuff. It can be 20-30% of your property is actually valued in those assets, the parking lot. Okay. That's pavement, that's concrete, the bollards, all that stuff. So that's huge. So the engineer is coming, identifying what all there is there. And then you have the building structure. Okay. That's usually going to be the majority. And then you have the personal property. All that can be like I said, like decorative lighting, can be furnishing, can be all sorts of things like equipment or carpeting, cabinets, all that kind of stuff. Anything that's in a building that's not considered integral to the structure. So now we're looking at a retail property and we're saying, hey, we can now identify 20, 30, 40% of the property value, the purchase price, into these other categories, which now you can take as a tax write-off in the first year. Mm-hmm. Or over a 5-year period, that's huge.
That's because most of the time when we buy properties as investors, we know that there's some deferred maintenance. You have to upgrade the parking lot. You have to maybe change the facade. You have to add, you know, additional lighting. Maybe it's too dark. You want to make it more bright and feel more safe and things like that. So back to the interior really quick, because that's really, I love that you sort of painted that picture for the audience. And I'm sure there's, you know, like you mentioned, there's 20, 50 other things. When we go, like, let's say in an office building or like an industrial building, like the structure would be the offices and all that stuff, but the stuff inside. Now, do you mentioned it could be the tenant. So does the tenant can also like use cost segregation for their corporate taxes? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. If the tenant spends money on something, so that then they can take the tax deductions on the money that was spent, if it was spent in real estate, and the tenant improvements they spend the money on to improve the interior, all that can be depreciated, which means they can identify how much of that is, you know, the personal property, how much is structural, and then use that as a tax deduction if they're the ones spending the money.
But is it accelerated though? Like, let's say a retail tenant goes in, installs a grease trap, which can be expensive for some people. That can get accelerated. Is that what you're telling?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, cool. Can be exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And then for example, in an office building, like when you have, like the things that can be depreciated on the lobby would be kind of like furnishings and like different things, maybe lighting. Would lighting in the lobby be considered structural?
There are some types of lighting. When you're talking about lighting, there's always broken into two categories. So there's main lighting and then there's decorative lighting. And it's kind of a gray area, mm-hmm. but the main lighting, that's like you need lighting, you need electrical for a building. So that's considered structural, but any type of decorative lighting, so if you have LED lighting, you have other things around the perimeters or spotlights or anything like that, or chandeliers, all of that is considered decorative lighting that depreciates on a 5-year schedule.
Got it. Okay. And how much does something like this cost a property owner?
It's typically, you know, and it depends on the size and shape and type of property, but it usually ranges somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 for something like this, and not contingent on the tax savings. So you may have a $20 million building and you're looking at like a $2, $3 million tax benefit. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be like in that range, about $5,000 to $10,000. Yeah, crazy.
Got it. Okay, that's actually really fair. What do you think most people don't do this? Because I don't know anybody that's really taken advantage of something like this.
I think, believe it or not, there are a lot of the seasoned investors are doing this. A lot of times they may not even know they're doing it. Sometimes their accounting firm will outsource it for them. But part of the reason is, especially people who are new to the business, they just don't know about it. Like I said, the accountants majority of accountants aren't proactive enough just telling their clients about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So do you spend a lot of time networking with accountants? And who do you spend most of your time networking with? Is it brokers or is it accountants first or attorneys first? Like,
you know, I network with everyone, anyone and everyone. I'm not, I really think there's a way to add value to everyone, and you never know where. I prefer, you know, speaking directly to real estate investors and owners, just because in the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to be the decision makers. Mm-hmm. And so it just saves a couple extra steps, but definitely network with accountants because they have to be involved in the process as well.
Right. That makes sense. So if there was something that you were to tell, like how would you advise a commercial real estate professional? Because let me back up. This is a great reason, right? Even if you called a property owner that you haven't done business with before, or somebody who you lost a listing to, but now the new listing agent is just not performing. Even if you talked to this property owner last week, this is something and a really, really powerful reason to reach back out to them and show a ton of value, especially during, you know, this year of, you know, the pandemic of COVID, where they really need to be careful with their dollars because, you know, people aren't paying rent, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. How would you advise, let's say, Bucky, and if I was a broker still, like, how would you advise us to approach, you know, educating people about this and really using it as a way in? Because you have to do that every day with investors, right?
Exactly. One of the biggest, you know, advantages to this is that we run a free analysis of any property. So that's really the most educational thing. When people see the numbers in front of them and like, okay, if I wasn't, they may not have heard of it. They have no idea what it is. But as soon as you see those numbers, like, okay, this is what my tax deductions would look like if I didn't do conservation, just regular depreciation is my account doing. And this is what it would look like if I did it. It's usually like just a light bulb moment. It's like a no-brainer. So what I always tell brokers is that just bring it up. Just bring it up and say, hey, do you have any idea what cost segregation is? So half the people will have no idea, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
another you know, large percentage will say, oh, it's probably, you know, it's tax related, my accountant deals with it, which 90% of the time they don't. But they just assume that, which is a safe assumption, right? But it doesn't preclude us from educating ourselves. So, you know, go ahead, listen to a podcast, go ahead, you know, take a webinar, go do yourself a favor, take 10 minutes and just do a little research on this. And reach out to get a free analysis, because that's going to be more eye-opening than anything else. And if that's what I tell people.
So let me ask you a question, Jonah. So like, let's say, for example, Bucky has a target landlord that he's been trying to do business with for a long time, whether it's for sale or they just acquired the property, he's been trying to do the leasing, whatever the scenario is. He could go in and say, hey, you know, there's a possibility that you could be saving a lot of money. Has your broker told you about this? No. And go, look, I don't want to step into your broker's shoes or on your broker's toes, but I think this is something that you should be taking a look at, because especially during now, you could be saving, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'll run a free analysis. Is it safe to say that he can offer a free analysis and basically ping Yona and bring him in to do that free analysis?
Yeah, exactly.
Holy hell, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that, Bucky? But everybody knows you in Rochester, so I don't think you need something like that. But brokers who aren't, you know, as visible as you are online, I mean, what are your thoughts, Buck?
Well, I do know a property owner that has done it here in Rochester, and there's a gentleman that markets himself as the cost segregation guy. And I've been reached out to over time as well from other cost segregation people. I think that it's definitely a strategy worth pursuing. One thing I would add, you got to be making some money, correct, in order to capitalize on the depreciation?
Well, yeah, of course. You have to make money in order to benefit from tax deductions. If you don't have any income, then the tax deductions won't help you.
So for young brokers, and this is not to say you wouldn't get into a property owner that is doing extremely well, but for young brokers like myself, most of the people that I'm selling properties to, and it's starting to change now over time, but they're not making money yet. And their work, like they're taking big risks to get into these properties, and they're trying to find a way to make this, whether it's passive income or maybe a full-time career in the future. And so it's how do we educate them that when the time comes, if they're making money with their property, that they could use this tool.
Right.
The guy that I'm speaking of that did extremely, he was in his 70s, he owned multiple strip malls, and it made perfect sense for him to do it because he did cost segregation across his portfolio of four kind of neighborhood strip malls. One thing I wanted to ask is, do you pay referral fees to brokers that bring you leads that turn into business for you?
Sure. So I want to, you know, comment on your previous, what you said before about the making money, but yeah, we can, there's not a lot of meat on the bone. You know, when you're talking about a $5,000-$10,000, fee for a study to be done, sure, you know, a 10% referral fee is nice. It's not gonna write home about, but it can definitely help.
Yeah, and I've had other cost segregation people just say that to me in the past, so that's why I asked the question. And all those little dollars, as we know, add up. Like one of my favorite ones is whenever I refer the telecommunications vendor for internet or anything like that, they also pay referral fees in our market. So they add up over time.
Hey, back to point something that Bucky was mentioning. If you're not making any money, right? You had mentioned that there is a possibility of passing through the cost segregation savings to personal income. So let's say the investor has like a lot of money coming in from different sources. Is it possible, like if you're not making any money, to do the cost segregation? Let's say if it's an excess of, you know, $10,000 in savings, can you, even if the building's vacant, can you do it to offset your personal income?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was going to comment, that, you know, you have to kind of analyze the situation. Everyone's situation is different, right? But when you say the guy's not making any money yet, you always have to question that. How, you know, how is he making money to pay, you know, to pay the bills? Is the property not profitable? You know, that's possible, but the property not being profitable might be because you're also factoring income tax. You know, at the end of the day, you have to pay taxes, but if this is a way to negate your tax liability, so that's opening up, you know, more cash flow and will actually help them grow more. And like you said, Andrew, this, if you're a real estate professional, you can use this, or even if your spouse is a real estate professional, right? You can use any excess tax deductions to offset any other income as well.
See, that's really smart right there, Bucky.
But what defines real estate professional, just for those that maybe don't know?
Absolutely. It's actually a tax terminology. So it's a box you check on your tax return that says that you spend more than 50% of your time, of your working time during the year, in the real estate trader business. And that's defined as someone who is either, you know, building, doing construction, brokering, owning, managing, operating, acquiring, any of these things, renovating, anything that's involved. Actually, you obviously have to own property, because if you don't, then it doesn't help you because you won't get any depreciation if you don't actually own property. But once you have more than 50% of the time, and the second qualification is it has to be more than 750 hours a year, which is not a lot. If you're working, it's about 16 hours a week, but you can't just like retire and still get this status.
And one thing I wanted to ask, and this just recently came up in a tour I had done with a general contractor, remind me of the term that you were referring to that's new thanks to the CARES Act.
The QIP, the Qualified Improvement Property.
So I was touring this space that had what is becoming more popular, the paneled wall systems. So they're actually walls that can be removed from the space that have within them all the electrical, all of the everything. I mean, it has basically, it's a mobile system that you can move and adjust build outs and take it with you when you leave. And they were saying with that type of system that it actually is not a structural item. And this was one way to also write off additional build out or depreciate additional build out in investments over a period of time faster.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a big deal. And I think that's part of the reason why Congress introduced it is because, you know, now we're looking at how can we get the maximum, you know, we're not making a lot of money maybe. So we want to knock at our tax liability, our tax bill as much as possible.
Man, this is awesome stuff. This is really powerful. I'm glad we had you on. What do you think, Bucky?
Do you know anything? I just got an email on it this morning. do you do the 1031s? Do you get anything? Do you get involved in any of those?
Yeah. So our company, we also have, we're a qualified intermediary for 1031s. So we definitely, we do those as well. One of the biggest national companies doing that. I don't personally get too involved in it, but you know, my colleagues are involved in that.
Yeah, interesting. It was coming from Colliers, and they were just sharing about tenant in commons and Delaware statutory trust and how partners can get involved in exchanges. So it's not just an individual thing. It's where you can pool capital and have some savings relative to deferment relative to your taxes.
That's interesting. Hey, can you forward me that email so we can get that person on the show?
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting because it sounds almost like a syndicate portfolio. Cool. All right, Yona, how do people find you? People who are listening in, we'll put Yona's information in the show notes, but go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. Best place to find me, like you said, Andrew, LinkedIn. I'm very, very active on that platform. You can find me there. You can also go to yonaweiss.com. Got a lot of information there. You can find out about the Weiss Advice podcast on that. And you can get a free analysis just by going to my website.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Our company, Madison Specs, like I said, we're the largest national company doing this, working in all 50 states. So you can go to madisonspecs.com as well.
And for those of you listening to the audio, the way you spell Yona Weiss is Y-O-N-A-H-W-E-I-S-S. See, I'm just not good. You should have done it. All right, everybody. So if you like this episode, please make sure if you're on YouTube, hit the like button and subscribe and share it with your friends. So on LinkedIn, go ahead and share it. And that way, Yona is very active on LinkedIn and social media. So he'll see you and he can jump right in. We'll put Bucky's contact information in the show notes. And of course, like I mentioned before, if you guys want to generate more leads using this new tool we released, the Magic Link, we'll have the video to what it is in the show notes. And other than that, Bucky, I will see you next week. Yona, I will see you on LinkedIn later today.
Sooner than you probably think.
Right. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for your time.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.